Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about just one subject that we've spoken about many times over the past 20 years, and it affects both America and Israel and the whole world. The United States and Western nations are close to coming to an agreement with Iran on its nuclear bomb-making program. The agreement will basically allow the Iranians to continue to enrich uranium. In other words, they'll be able to continue to work toward achieving nuclear bombs. Supposedly, the amount of uranium and the percentage is going to be below nuclear bomb-making capacity, but it's so easy to cheat. And the Iranians always cheat. It's so easy to keep going, and the Iranians have seen that there is no will on the part of this Muslim Jew-hater, Barack Hussein Obama, Yamach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshaim Yirkav. May his name and memory be obliterated. There's no will on the part of this Muslim Jew-hater Obama to stop them. They see, right, they see that the Americans, Europeans, the whole world is selling out. They can see that. And they know that India and Pakistan had sanctions against them and the world threatened them and warned them not to develop nuclear bombs, but they did anyway. And nothing happened to India and Pakistan. In fact, aid to India and Pakistan increased after they became nuclear powers. So the Iranians understand that they're able to get away with this. And the real guilty party here, of course, Barack Hussein Obama's guilty, but the real guilty party, because we know Obama's the enemy, the real guilty party is Benjamin Netanyahu, that filthy, lowlife coward. That cowardly, good-for-nothing piece of garbage who is the Prime Minister of Israel, who did not destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program last year during the presidential election when nobody in America would have said anything against Israel doing that. During the presidential election, if he had done it then, even Obama would not have condemned him because Obama would have been in the middle of trying to get reelected. There were so many opportunities over the past 20 years for Israel to take action. And this low, cowardly piece of garbage, Benjamin Netanyahu, together with all the other pieces of garbage who were the Prime Minister of Israel, allowed Israel to be put in this situation where they're now facing the danger of a nuclear holocaust. And so Iran will continue to advance and cheat and work toward building nuclear bombs, and they're very close. Other Muslim nations will seek to develop nuclear bombs now in response, so you'll have a nuclear arms race. I mean, this is a recipe. This is a a recipe for catastrophe. Catastrophe. Netanyahu himself always said that this was unacceptable, that this is terrible, that this is something Israel cannot tolerate, that he will not allow Iran to do this. He won't allow it. What has he been doing for the past 20 years, if not allowing it? All one big bluff. Netanyahu is a bluff, the Israeli army is a bluff, the Israeli air force is a bluff, all the Jewish leaders, one big bluff. And it's the Jewish people that suffer because of it, but the Jews keep re-electing him and don't turn to the right people. So, they also bear a great deal of the blame. And I say this because I love the Jewish people. And I love Israel. And it hurts me to see this insanity, this suicidal insanity, this failure to understand the lessons of the Holocaust as we now face the danger of another one, God forbid. And we told you that this was going to happen. We warned you when Obama was running for re-election that Obama was going to do everything he could to prevent Israel from taking action. He would not take military action against Iran, and he would try to prevent Israel from taking military action. And we warned you that Netanyahu is a very weak and cowardly leader and that he would give in to Obama's pressure. We warned you all of this was going to happen. And surely enough, it's playing out. The only way this can now be salvaged is if there's a miracle. God willing, we pray, and we should all pray for a miracle. But it'll take a miracle. If the talks break down, that would take a miracle, because Iran, I think, is not so stupid as to let this golden opportunity pass by where they can get an end to the sanctions, plus nuclear weapons, plus everything they wanted, all handed to them on a silver platter. So I think it would take a miracle, a ness. In Hebrew, the word for miracle is ness. It would take a ness to stop this at this point. It would take a miracle to convince Israel to strike, because the leaders are so cowardly. By the way, Israel can still strike, can still tell Obama, go screw yourself and strike. If I were prime minister, I would do that. But we know Netanyahu doesn't have the guts to do that. He didn't have the guts to do it even in the middle of a presidential election when both candidates were pretending to be pro-Israel to get Jewish votes and Jewish campaign contributions. And if there's an agreement, as it looks like there's going to be, God forbid, but it looks like there's going to be between Iran and the United States and European countries, if there is such an agreement, do you really think Israel will defy all these countries and defy the whole world and strike Iran even though there's an agreement? Do you think Israel will send in the Air Force and attack them militarily even if there's an agreement? I mean, come on. You know Netanyahu's not going to do that. It would take a miracle to produce that situation. We pray for the miracle. We pray for miracles all the time. But it will take a miracle to save Israel from this catastrophe at this point. If only we had had the money that we need to reach the people of Israel. To reach all the people of Israel on a regular basis. You would have had a whole different environment in Israel. There would have been tremendous pressure on Netanyahu to act before even. There would have been tremendous pressure on him to act. And if we had had a big budget and big resources in Israel, it would have given us a lot of publicity in the United States. We might have been more successful in our campaign also in the United States to build resistance against Obama. I'm not saying we would have defeated Obama for re-election. That would have required a really big budget. But we certainly could have changed the atmosphere in Israel, which is a small country. And if we have with our ability to reach people, if we had a multi-million dollar budget, we could reach the people of Israel. We could have done that. And so we issued our warnings, and we were the one group that was right from the start on this issue. Let's hope and pray that there's a miracle here. We should pray. Let's hope there's a miracle. We're going to continue to speak out, and we're going to continue to do videos, and we're going to continue to try to reach people. We don't give up. We keep fighting. We're going to keep fighting. You know, with us at least, that we don't stop, that we keep fighting, that we fight to the end. Because we didn't give up, because we fought so hard, we were able to free over 1 million Jews from the Soviet Union in the days of JDL, when I was the national chairman of the JDL. We're not giving up on saving Israel either. And when I say saving Israel, Israel's not going to be destroyed, God forbid. That's not going to happen. But the possibility of terrible death and suffering, and even a nuclear attack, God forbid, that's possible. Those things can happen. We're trying to save Israel from that possibility as well. And so, once again, I hope that this proves to everybody how essential it is that our message get out. No one else. Can you cite anybody else who has been consistently warning about this over and over again for 20 years? Can you really find anybody else who has been doing this type of work that we've been doing on this issue and on all the other issues involving the survival of Israel for 20 years? Can you find other groups? I wish there were. Please tell me who they are. Help us to fight Netanyahu's cowardly, treasonous policies and to wake up the Jews in Israel. Help us. Every Jew and every righteous Gentile. You are put into this world to live good lives yourselves and be God-fearing, and also to help your families, love your families, and also, for those of you who are Jewish, to help your fellow Jews, and for those of you who are righteous Gentiles, to bless Israel and make this a better world by blessing Israel. We're all obligated to be part of that. I know that not many people do that. Because most people don't do the right thing. That's what the Bible says. The Bible tells us in generation after generation that most people were evil and most people were bad. I mean, this is something we see repeated over and over again. It's a theme of the Bible. But JTFers are wise enough to want to be different, are wise enough to want to speak out, to want to tell the truth, to want to issue the warnings, to want to prevent terrible tragedies from occurring. That's why we have this movement. And so participate with us and help us. Help us to fight Netanyahu and to wake up the Jews of Israel. And help us to build a movement, Jews for Cruz, to help Ted Cruz. Because if we had a president like Ted Cruz, who has said that he would immediately issue an ultimatum to Iran and say, either you open up, stop the uranium production, open up your facilities now to full to our inspectors right away, everywhere we want to inspect, so that it's fully verifiable. Do that, or we're going to strike you right now militarily. That's what Ted Cruz has said he would do. So he's taken a good position on this issue. Now, the problem is the presidential election is in 2016, and Iran probably will have nuclear bombs before then, unless by some miracle it doesn't happen, but you know, they're headed in that direction. The presidential election's in 2016, and even then, the odds are against Ted Cruz. According to the polls, Hillary Clinton has a big lead in all the polls. We saw how America votes in the past two presidential elections. They voted for the left-wing Democrat, Barack Hussein Obama. According to the polls, they're even more for Hillary Clinton than they were for Obama. So there's no question. We got quite a tough uphill battle ahead of us. And we may not win. We may not win, but it's not a waste. Win or lose, it's not a waste. God counts our efforts. It's like when you say a prayer that supposedly isn't granted. Your request to God supposedly isn't granted. That is not a waste. You did not waste your time. That still counts. You never know when that prayer will be answered, maybe after we leave this world. You never know when something will come of that prayer. When you do a good deed, you never know what it will lead to. It's never a waste to do good things. It's never a waste to try to make this a better world, to do everything you can. Of course, you have to do things logically and effectively, but it's not a waste if you try and then fight against the odds because that's just the way the situation is. And then you seemingly fail. It's not a waste. And it was not foolish to try to make a difference. It never is. It's not foolish to try to make a difference. Eventually, it does make a difference. We want to show God that we're trying and that we won't be silent. And maybe God will have mercy on all of us because of the efforts of the few. That also is something that has happened many times in history. Look at the story of Noah. Noah found grace in the eyes of God, and Noah, all of humanity was saved because Noah was righteous. If there hadn't been at least one righteous person, who knows? Maybe the world as we know it would have disappeared. For Noah's sake, the world continues. That's an important lesson. That sometimes God saves the many for the sake of the few, because of the merit of the few, sometimes God saves the many because God is very merciful. And so help us. There are a number of things you can do to help. And you know we're right. You know we're right and you know how crazy this is. You know how right we've been all these years we've been right. And you know that. Not just on the issue of Iran, but on the other issues. You know we're right. So you know that the moral thing to do is to help us and to try to spread the word and to try to wake people up and to try to get people to do the right thing. Help us with our Hebrew and English videos. When you see us put up Hebrew and English videos like we did this week, you know, every week we put up 5-6 videos, at least 3 in Hebrew, at least 2 in English, sometimes 3 in English. Every single week you see us putting up at least a handful of videos. And our videos are very high quality videos. They're good videos. When you see us doing that, help us promote them on Facebook and YouTube. Like, favorite, comment, share, mirror the videos. Spread the word. And figure out other ways to publicize the videos. Do things that are imaginative. Help us on our forums and our Facebook pages with good posts and good threads so that people will want to participate. And last but not least, of course we need checks, money orders, cash donations that are sent by the regular mail to our post office box. That makes a big difference. Every contribution makes a big difference. And I thank the wonderful JTFers who on a regular basis have been helping us. I only wish that we had somebody like a Sheldon Adelson who could write out a check for $10 million and that would, you know, and then we'd be in business and we'd be able to really change the situation historically. We don't have any Sheldon Adelsons in our movement. But if we keep pushing and we keep spreading the word, maybe we'll find one eventually. Or find somebody. Or find some group of people who eventually will be able to make up the difference. And in the meantime, we change people's lives and we change people's views, and that's very important. So every check and money order and cash donation really does make a difference. And other people may want to help by clicking on the donate button on our English and Hebrew main pages. We have a donate button, so you can donate by credit card online. Or, again, you can send checks, money orders, cash donations to the post office box. It does make a difference. And thank you, and God bless the great JTFers who are doing it. This is a very dangerous situation. Very dangerous. And look at what lying bluffers all the leaders are. Obama, Netanyahu, all of them said, we will not accept in a nuclear Iran. We will not accept it. And here we are entering into an agreement which basically trusts the mullahs and the ayatollahs when they're so close, when they have always cheated and never kept their word. How insane this is. Rabbi Meir Kahana had a slogan. Give me the power and I'll take care of them once and for all. That was his slogan. And hundreds of thousands of people began to respond to that slogan. That's why they banned him, because a lot of Israelis liked that when they heard that. They said they knew that this was one guy who meant what he said and said what he meant. JTF also means what it says and says what it means. Give us the power and we'll deal with these issues and arouse people, and we won't compromise, and we'll stand for the truth, and we'll fight for righteousness, and we'll fight for justice. Give us that ability. Let's hope and pray also, in addition to the financial help we need financial help from our members, and we need you to help us on the forums, and we need to help us with the videos. We also need your prayers. We need you to pray that Hashem help us as a movement, and also that Hashem miraculously intervene to prevent Iran from developing nuclear bombs. Hashem, God, can do anything. And so let's pray that He miraculously intervene, even though this generation does not deserve it. We know we don't deserve it, but we pray for God's mercy and compassion anyway. All right. On that note, let's get to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start out with the great wandering samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, Der Chaim, what is your opinion on circuses? Do they promote animal abuse? Unquote. Yes, I think they do promote animal abuse, and you know, we're not permitted to do things that cause what in Hebrew we call Tsa'ar ba'alei chayim. Tsa'ar ba'alei chayim means causing sorrow to animals. Unnecessarily causing them sorrow is something that we're not permitted to do. The Torah permits us to eat meat, to eat animals. We're permitted to do that. But, and even then we have to do it very humanely. But we are not permitted to do things that unnecessarily hurt God's creatures. And I think just to have it for the purpose of a circus or entertainment, to do things that really cause the animals sorrow. And I think that the pressure that's put on these animals in these situations does indeed cause the animals sorrow. That, I believe, is something that goes against God's will. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And now we go to our great friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think of the Senate race in New Jersey to fill Frank Lautenberg's old seat? Thanks, unquote. Well, actually, the race, you wrote this the day before the election, the special election. The election's over now. And Cory Booker, the left-wing Democrat, won the election. As I've said on prior programs, Joe, I think Cory Booker is a complete phony, a fraud, and I think that he's just another one of these politicians who will sell everybody out just to get ahead. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic. And the great Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, one, what does it mean to be a wild ass regarding Yishmael? Unquote. Okay, let's start with that. The Torah does indeed describe Yishmael as Pere Adam. Pere Adam means a wild ass. Pere is actually a special type of wild ass. He's not like the usual domesticated donkey that people ride. And that this is a really wild animal that breaks through all barriers and that doesn't cooperate. That's what a pere is. Pere Adam, which is what the Muslims, what Yishmael is the Muslims, by the way. Yishmael represents the Muslims, represents the Arabs and the Muslims in the Bible. Yishmael is called the Pere Adam. When his mother Hagar, the Egyptian, was told by an angel that he was going to be a Pere Adam. And that means he's untamable, that he attacks in all directions. Now, let's just quickly analyze those words. Pere means wild ass, but Adam means a human being. So in other words, he's part wild ass, part human being. Because his mother, Hagar HaMitzrit, Hagar the Egyptian, because of his mother's side of the family, he's Pere. Pere, because Egypt is called Pere. In the Bible and in the Torah, Egypt is referred to as a wild ass, as Pere. So because of the mother's side of his family, he's referred to as Pere, as a wild ass. But on the father's side of his family, his father was Avraham Avinu. His father was Abraham, our father. And so he also has the characteristics, supposedly, of a human being as well, because of the father's side of his family. Now, what that means is that Yishmael is a combination of both the wild, violent traits of his Egyptian mother, Hagar, Pere, with the faith, the monotheistic faith of Avraham, in the belief in one God that Avraham had. So he mixes wild, violent traits, rape, murder, conquest, thievery. He mixes all of these evil impulses with a belief in one God, with faith in one God, because of the influence of his father Abraham. The result is the worst possible result you can have. Instead of controlling his evil impulses, which religious faith is supposed to do, you're supposed to control when you have an evil impulse. You're not allowed to give in to your evil impulses. If you have a yetzer hara, if you have an evil impulse, you're not supposed to engage in sinful behavior. But instead of controlling his evil impulses, he actually uses his religion to sanctify them. Mass murder becomes holy in Islam. Genocidal hatred becomes holy. Not only does he commit mass murder, he doesn't think it's a sin. He thinks it's holy. He thinks genocidal hatred is holy. Rape becomes holy. Stealing becomes holy. Pedophilia becomes holy. All of these things are sanctified and turned into something sacred. Muhammad and the Muslims made rape and murder and pedophilia and genocide and torture and stealing. They turned all of these things into something sacred. And so Islam in the end days is the worst curse for both the Jews and for the world. It's a terrible curse. Yishmael is a terrible curse for the Jews and for the world. And Chazal teach us that we're going to have terrible suffering at the hands of Yishmael in the end days. Be'acharit hayamim, in the end of days. In other words, the days right before the coming of the Mashiach, of the Messiah. That Yishmael will become a very serious problem in the end days. Okay, now let's go to the next part of Dr. Dan's question. He now, Dr. Dan's post. And I quote, two, comment on Avraham's relationship with Yitzchak and Hagar after Sarah passes away, unquote. Okay. Well, first of all, Sarah Imenu, Sarah our mother, she died after the Akedah. When she passed away, it was already after the Akedah. The Akedah is when Avraham was told by Hashem, was told by God, was tested by God, and told that he had to sacrifice his son, Yitzchak. And, of course, he passed the test, but at that time, then Sarah, his wife, passes away. Now, you're asking what his relationship was with Yitzchak and Hagar, Hagar being the woman who gave birth, actually, to Ishmael, after Sarah passes away. Well, first of all, you know, Avraham at first probably thought that Ishmael would be the chosen one, would be the one who would lead, would continue the legacy, God's legacy. Because Abraham was the first one. Then the next one he probably thought would be Ishmael when he couldn't have children with Sarah, because he couldn't have children with her for many years. He probably thought, well, it's going to have to be Ishmael, the son of Hagar the Egyptian. So there was a time when he probably thought it was going to be Ishmael. By the time Sarah passes away, it was very clear that that would not be true. By the time Sarah passes away, Yitzchak now already went through the Akedah. In other words, Yitzchak was willing. He didn't say a word. He didn't object. He was willing to be killed in the sacrifice. He was willing to be a human sacrifice. If God commands it, he was willing to die. And Avraham was willing to sacrifice him. As painful as it is, he was willing to do it. And so, at this point, after, and then of course God intervenes and prevents it, of course, and Avraham and Yitzchak both pass the test. So the question now is, obviously now Avraham understands that without any doubt that after all this, that Yitzchak is the one who has been chosen to continue the legacy, to continue God's legacy, not Yishmael. That Yitzchak and the Jews are going to be the ones continuing God's legacy, not Yishmael and the Muslims. Yishmael eventually would become the Muslims, and Yitzchak, of course, eventually would become the Jews. So that was especially clear, and so I'm sure it's clear that his relationship with Hagar and with Yishmael was based upon that understanding that they were not the ones who would continue the legacy. God's legacy, that it was indeed the son of Sarah, Yitzchak, who would continue that legacy. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to the great Chicago Jew who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what is Klal Yisrael, unquote. Klal Yisrael means the whole of the Jewish people, because all the Jewish people together have one soul. The whole Jewish people from all generations have one soul. There is one Jewish soul. In other words, Jews individually have souls, as all human beings do, of course. All human beings have souls. But the Jewish people as a whole, as a nation, have a soul, have a collective soul as well. And the Jewish people as a whole, collectively, are referred to as Klal Yisrael. Thank you, Chicago. And by the way, that Klal Yisrael refers to the Jewish people not only in the land of Israel, but all over the world. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to the great Lewinsky sucks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, young GOP voters are secular and very moderate, quote unquote, They are the reason Huckabee did not win in 2008. Can we bring them around to Cruz? Unquote. I don't know. I don't know if we can. We're going to try. I don't know if we can. We're going to try to bring everybody around to Cruz. Are young Republican voters really less right-wing than the older Republican voters? I don't know. I don't know. Is that statistically proven? I'm not I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe that's true. I know that young voters in general are far to the left of older voters, that the young generation in general is far to the left. But those young voters who identify as Republican, who are a minority, a distinct minority among young voters, are they really also less conservative than the older voters and than the older generation of Republican voters? I don't know if that's true. We, of course, want to bring around not only young Republican voters. We must change the way young Americans, especially young white Americans, we've got to change the way they view the election, and young Hispanics and young Asians also. Young blacks, I don't think we're going to change. I don't think we're going to be able to change young blacks and young Muslims. There are certain groups that I don't think we're going to have success with. But young whites and certain categories of young Hispanics and young Asians, those people we do want to influence because they are overwhelmingly supporting the Democrats now. And you know who's responsible for that? George W. Bush and the Republicans. They were so bad. They did such a terrible job in office with the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War and just endless war that achieved absolutely nothing and wrecking the economy and continuing binge spending and all the other craziness that, you know, young people, that's all young people saw. Young people are not well educated today. Young people, you know, despite computers and technology and everything else, the average young person is much less educated than prior generations. And so young people today are not well educated. And young people today, when they saw Bush and they saw what a disaster he was, and then the media and Hollywood and everybody else was able to get them all excited about Obama, so they swung to the left. And so they're in the left right now. They're very left-wing right now, most of them, majority of them. Can we change that? Well, if Obama's policies fail disastrously, and if we can show people that they fail disastrously, because, you know, Obama's policies have been a terrible failure, but the media has been able to convince Americans that maybe they haven't failed so badly. We've got to convince people they're failing disastrously and America's falling apart. We've got to convince them of that. If they can be convinced of that, maybe we can move a lot of these young people, not just young Republicans, but young people in general, to the right and get them to support Ted Cruz. At least that's what we would hope for. That's what did happen with Ronald Reagan. When Ronald Reagan was president, teenage voters and voters in their 20s were the biggest supporters of Reagan. They voted overwhelmingly for Reagan. He brought them over because young people saw the failures of Jimmy Carter, so they decided to swing to the right. In our generation, we see that young people see the failures of Bush, so they decided to swing to the left. We've got to swing them in the other direction. We've got to show them the left doesn't work, and we've got to convince them that what Ted Cruz stands for is the best solution. Not going to be easy. Not going to be easy. The media is against us. The money people are against us. Even the Republican establishment's against us. It's going to be very hard. But we're going to try our best. We're going to try our best. And there's one thing we do have going for us. Ted Cruz is a very, very effective spokesman. At least with him, you're not going to see the type of meandering and the type of pathetic mumbling and hesitation about attacking your opponents and not speaking and not putting together full sentences that you saw with Mitt Romney and John McCain. You're not going to see that with Ted Cruz. He is very, very articulate. He is, in terms of his ability to give speeches and in terms of his ability to debate, he is a Ronald Reagan type politician. He's a Ronald Reagan, he's a Reagan-esque type leader in that regard. So, you know, maybe we have at least a slim chance. Maybe we have a slim chance. We're going to go for it because it's the only thing, it's the only game in town. It's the only game in town. I think the other candidates are all establishment garbage. And so we'll try. We're going to try our best. Let's hope that we can succeed. Thank you, Lewinsky. Lewinsky sucks. And now we go to our good friend Obama Scum out of USA Now, who writes, and I quote, Hollywood actor Dennis Hopper, who died in 2010, was a Republican who voted for Obama because he didn't like Bush and Sarah Palin. Where is he now? Unquote. I don't think he's in a good place if he supported Barack Hussein Obama. Not only did he support Obama, but because he was an actor and because he's a famous person and because it was in the media at that time when he announced that he was going to support Obama, he might have influenced other people also to do evil and to support Obama. So I think that's definitely going to be held against him. After he died in 2010. I think he died of cancer. But that's certainly not going to be in his favor that he promoted this evil Muslim Jew hater who's causing so much damage in the world. Thank you, Obama scum out of USA Now. And now we go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "Is it better if evil countries like Germany were divided, like West and East Germany? We know it's good when Arabs are divided and not united. A united Germany atop the EU, one government Europe, seems more dangerous for Israel than a divided Germany and no EU," unquote. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you in general, yes. In general, when there are evil governments, and the German government is evil, and Germany is doing terrible, evil things, Germany is leading the European Union in actions against Israel all the time. They're funding peace now. They're funding the radical left in Israel. They're pressuring Israel to commit suicide. They're working to dilute the sanctions against Muslim terrorist Iran, to enable Iran to build nuclear bombs. They're doing terrible things, and the Germans themselves, together with other EU countries like France, built a lot of Iran's nuclear technology. It wasn't only Russia. The Germans also helped. So, yes, there's no question they're doing bad things, and so weakening them and dividing them, if they're continuing to be evil and continuing they didn't learn anything from the horrors that they committed in the Holocaust. They're still behaving like this. So I would agree with you. I would agree with you. The evil people, we do not want evil people to be strong. We want them to be weakened as much as possible. Thank you, Binyamin Yisrael. And now we go to the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, may God grant success in your mission. Does God love everyone?" Unquote. No. God may start out loving everyone when he creates everybody. He may start out loving everyone, but if people are really cruel and vicious and evil and do terrible things to God's other creations, we know from the Bible and we know from the things that God says that God does not love them. That they lose God's love when they become evil, vicious, cruel, selfish, egotistical individuals. So God does not love everyone. People can lose God's love. That can be part of the punishment if they act in a very cruel and evil way. And now LKZ writes, and I quote, "Should one recite Shema if they have no tefillin or tzitzit?" Unquote. Well, first of all, LKZ, of course, every Jew should acquire tefillin and should acquire tzitzit. Every Jew should have that. And Jews should put on tefillin every weekday, and on Shabbat and on Shabbatot and on the Chagim, on the holidays and on the Sabbath, we don't put it on. And tzitzit is something that Jews should wear during the day. In the evening, you don't have to wear it. Should Jews have that? They should. It is something that people can acquire, and they should have it. But until they get it, they still should be saying the Shema, absolutely. If they don't have it, for whatever reason, at the present time, they still should say the Shema in the meantime. Absolutely, yes. Yes. Thank you, LKZ. And now we go to the great Paper Cut, who writes, and I quote, "Chaim, how can atheist Jews still still be considered Jewish? That makes no sense to me. What say you?" Unquote. Well, the reason for that is because Jews are not just a religion. Jews are also a nation and a people. I mean, you have atheist Frenchmen and atheist Danes and atheist Arabs and you also have atheist Jews. The Jews are not just a religion, they're also a people. Now, is it a terrible sin to be an atheist? Yes, it's a terrible sin, especially for a Jew, the Jews are supposed to be a light unto the nations. They're supposed to be convincing all the nations of the world to believe in God. And if they themselves are not, it's a terrible desecration of God's name. So it's a very serious sin, no question about it. But they're still Jews. Even evil Jews are still Jews. We see this in the Bible. If you look paper cut in the Bible and see all the evil kings of Israel, they were still called kings of Israel, even though they were evil, even though they were terrible. They were idol worshippers. They murdered the prophets. They committed terrible sins against their own people and against other people. And still, the Bible still refers to them as kings of Israel, even though they were evil. So Jews, even an evil Jew, is still a Jew. Is he betraying the Jewish faith and the Jewish people if he's evil? Yes. But a Jewish traitor is still a Jew. Even though he's a traitor, he's still a Jew. Now, there is a concept of karet, which means being cut off. But that's a complicated concept. You know, you could argue that they're cut off from the Jewish people. That's possible to argue that. There is a possibility of arguing that. There is an argument to be made that they're actually cut off from the Jewish people in this world and in the next, that they're karet. That's the term in Hebrew, karet. But then again, you do have some basis, a biblical basis, a Torah basis for seeing in the Bible, in the Book of Kings and in the Book of Chronicles, you see evil kings who are still referred to as the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah. So you know, it's possible to look at it. It's possible there is an argument to be made that they are still Jewish, and there's an argument to be made that they're not. In any event, we certainly hope that atheists will come around to believing in God. There is a God. There's no question that there's a God. There's no doubt that there is a God and a creator of the universe. And we hope that people will come around to seeing that, because that's for their good and for the good of the whole world. It would be for the best if people understood that this world is not something that was just created by chance. I mean, this unbelievably complicated universe is not something that just happened, and that there's no controlling force over it, and it's just something that by chance just happened. It's absurd. I mean, it's just absurd. The fact that the world exists, the fact that there is a creation proves that there had to be a creator. And so let's hope that atheist Jews and atheist Gentiles will come around to believe in God. Thank you, Paper Cut. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, see this question, and there's a link here. Okay, I went to the link. Oh, you wanted to get in a longer question because you... Tag Mechir. We can't do... You know, we intentionally cut down the size of questions here because I don't want to do three-hour shows. We intentionally cut down the size of questions here. And now you're trying to get around it. But because you can't fit it all in what... You can't fit all the words into the SJTF question. So now you're opening up a site. You know, you're opening up a thread and directing me toward the thread Tag Mechir. If we do this, then there's no point in all the work we did to make sure that there'd be some limit on the size of the questions. I'm going to read the beginning part of your question. Let's see if we can read the beginning part of your question. But please, let's live within the bounds of what we created here. You know, I'm happy to answer the questions from our great members, but we intentionally reduce the size of the questions. Tag Mechir writes, even though we are against land for peace in general, is there or were there times when we should have just accepted foreign rule like Rome, grown stronger, and then attacked when the prospects were better for us to win? Okay, you're asking about tactics. There are times when you put things off for tactical reasons, and there are times when you don't. I mean, it depends on the circumstances. I mean, there may be times when it would have been, there might have been times when it would have been better to rebel at a different time. Possibly. Sometimes for tactical reasons, you do put things off. One thing which you never do, you never retreat. Once you have land, you never give up the land that you have. You don't surrender land that you have, and you don't make concessions to your enemy. That you don't do. That you do not do. But whether or not you strike at your enemy immediately, or whether you wait a couple of weeks until it's a better time, you know, or wait even a couple of months until it's a better time, those are issues, those are tactical issues that sometimes can raise legitimate issues, legitimate questions. You do want to be practical. We can't depend on miracles, so you do want to be practical in waging war. And, you know, if you're being occupied by a foreign force, as we were by the Romans, if you're being occupied by a foreign force, when to rebel against that foreign force, against that foreign empire, those are tactical issues, and sometimes you do have to make decisions based upon what are the wisest tactics. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you do have to do that. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And now we go to the great Dan Ben Noach. Look at Dan Ben Noach, all that he does for us. What a great person. Have you seen all the threads from Dan Ben Noach and all that he does for us on the forum, on the Facebook pages? You know, and look at all of the Hebrew videos that were translated by Dan Ben Noach and all the other things. I mean, just absolutely fantastic. Anyway, Dan Ben Noach, now God bless Dan Ben Noach. Dan Ben Noach now writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, have you ever contacted your congressman about anything? When is it worthwhile to do this?" Unquote. Many times, Dan. Many times. And my congressman hates me. But I mean, you know, I had some congressmen who hated me. But no, I wouldn't contact them. If I knew they hated me, I wouldn't contact them about something if they knew me. But I would have some, you know, I would figure out some way to have somebody contact on my behalf or whatever if I needed something. But yes, you contact your congressman and your senator, even though they're bums. You contact them when you need something, of course. Sometimes you can get things done that way, especially if it's an issue involving the federal government or involving something that they can influence. Absolutely, you should contact them. Why not? Why not? Get these worthless political swine to finally do something for a change. Absolutely, you should contact them. Obviously, when you contact them, you don't tell them the truth about what you think about them. If I don't know, Dan, who your congressman is, maybe you have a good congressman, maybe you have good senators, maybe you have a good congressman. Senators, I doubt it, unless you live in Texas and your senator I know you don't live in Texas, so your senator is not Ted Cruz, so it's unlikely that you have a good senator, because almost all the other senators are human garbage. But your congressman, you may have a good, there are some members of Congress who aren't that bad. In my area, in New York, all of our congressmen and all of our senators are human waste products, are human waste material. I'm actually insulting human waste when I compare them to that. They are the lowest vermin on the face of the earth. They are the lowest form of human sewage that can ever be described or imagined, way beyond the imagination. Human sewage that is so vile. All the congressmen, all the senators, especially the self-hating Jewish ones in the New York area. And so, you know, but still, if I have a problem, or someone in my family has a problem, or someone I know has a problem that can be remedied by a congressman's letter or by a congressman intervening or a senator intervening, absolutely I will contact them. And you don't have to limit it to your congressman. If it's something your congressman can do and you don't get results from your congressman, you can write to your two senators as well. Absolutely. And I've done it, and I've gotten good, and by the way, sometimes I've gotten results by doing it. Absolutely. Thank you, Dan Ben Noach. And now we go to, and by the way, when I say write, you don't have to write a letter. You can call their office. You can write to them. There are all different types of things you can do. You can also call their office. You can go visit their office. You can make an appointment with them and sit down with one of their staff people and visit with them. They themselves personally are not going to get involved with you, but someone on their staff will. And if their staff writes a letter for you or does something or intervenes in some way or inquires for you about something, if there's something that you want some help with, yeah, why not? Why not? Thank you, Dan Ben Noach. God bless you, Dan Ben Noach. And now we go to the great Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what are your thoughts on Christopher Columbus and those who say he was a mass murderer, enslaver, and rapist of Native Americans?" Unquote. I don't know what Christopher Columbus did with Native Americans. I don't know enough about the history of it. I don't know if it's true. But I will say this. Before these people that are so concerned about Christopher Columbus, before they start picking on Christopher Columbus, and it's possible he may have done some terrible, if he did some terrible things, I do not favor murdering or enslaving or raping Native Americans. I have nothing against Native Americans. I don't know what he did or didn't do. But before we pick on Christopher Columbus, will these same people attack someone who we know for sure is a mass murderer? Nelson Mandela, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. Everybody's saying, what a hero, what a wonderful man. Obama, Clinton, they all praise Nelson Mandela. This vicious, murdering animal who was a terrorist and a butcher and who called for the destruction of Israel and who slaughtered women and children with the African National Congress, which was a terrorist organization. Yasser Arafat, who was a guest in Bill Clinton's Oval Office more than any other foreign guest. No one was invited to meet with Bill and Hillary Clinton more than Yasser Arafat. He was their best friend. He murdered thousands of people. Do these same people condemn him and condemn Mahmoud Abbas, who's now the new head of the PLO Fatah terrorist organization? Before they condemn Christopher Columbus, I want to see them condemn Mahmoud Abbas and Yasser Arafat and Nelson Mandela. I want to see them condemn Louis Farrakhan and Al Sharpton. Al Sharpton, who incited the Crown Heights pogroms, where Uncle Rosenbaum was stabbed to death by a mob of 20 black Nazis screaming, kill the Jews. I want to see them condemn Al Sharpton. And all these people that jump on the politically correct bus and attack Christopher Columbus. Some of them even attack the founding fathers. What hypocrites. Anyway, that's how I look at it. Before they come to me about Christopher Columbus, I want to see them attack. I want to see them condemn all of these people that we know for sure are mass murderers. Thank you, Maimonides. And now we go to the great Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, what is your opinion of Lou Pearlman? Thanks and God bless, unquote. Lou Pearlman, yeah, I mean, he lived in my neighborhood. He grew up in my neighborhood, and he's roughly my age. He's a crook. I mean, he's the guy who went to prison, I think, for 20 years or 25 years. I don't remember. I mean, it was a big story here in New York several years ago. He was busted for ripping off all of these bands, boy bands that he was ripping off. You know, stealing money from people with. I don't remember. It was a pyramid scheme. I don't remember the details, Confederate Kahanist, but he's a thief. He's a low-life thief. I don't like people who are thieves. I don't like crooks and thieves. I don't like dishonest people. This is someone who had a lot of connections, could have made a lot of money honestly, and because he was greedy, he decided to rip people off. I can't stand people like that, and I'm glad he got a long prison sentence. He's in federal prison right now. I think he's doing a 20 or 25 year prison sentence, and I think he deserves it. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And now we go to our great friend Selhar, who was active on the Hebrew and the English forums. Selhar writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, is it permissible to build over ancient burial sites? Unquote. That depends, Selhar. That depends. If it is an issue of urgent public need, and it's an issue, if it's an issue of pikuach nefesh, if it's an issue of saving lives, then it is permitted. If there's an urgent public need to save lives, then it is permitted. Here's how it works. If there is no alternative site, then the graves can be moved. But if there is an alternative site, if there's an alternative to doing this, then certainly you're not allowed. You are not allowed to build over ancient burial sites if there's an alternative. If you can build somewhere else, then you are not allowed to build over ancient burial sites. But if there is no realistic alternative site, and there's an urgent public need, and especially if it's an issue of pikuach nefesh, then you can move the graves. Halachically, you're permitted to move the graves in a situation like that. You move the graves to another area, or to another burial ground. But again, it's only if it involves pikuach nefesh or an urgent public need, and if there is no alternative site. If there is an alternative site, then you should not build over ancient burial sites. Thank you, Tzelhar. And by the way, that what I just said now is the halacha. This is an issue that I I'm familiar with. This that is the halacha. Thank you, Tzelhar. And now we go to our good friend Hayamin Tzadak, who writes, and I quote, Der Chaim Feiglin has joined Evil Shas and Yvette to support obese Leon for mayor against leftist Barkat. Should we even vote? Unquote. I wouldn't vote. I'm against Leon and I'm against Barkat. I think both of them are complete frauds and I'm against both of them. I would not vote for either one of them. I am not going to vote for a candidate who is the hand-picked candidate of Aryeh Deri and Shas and Yvette Lieberman. I'm not going to vote for somebody like that. And I wouldn't vote. Of course, I don't live in Israel, unfortunately, so I can't vote. But if I lived in Israel, I would not vote for Leon for that reason, because he's supported by terrible people. I would not support him. And Barkat, obviously, I wouldn't support. So in that case, that's a situation where I would not vote for either one of them. Thank you, Hayamin Tzadak. And now we go to the great Gam Bashan veGam Gilad, who is, of course, one of our great global moderators on our Hebrew forum. Gam Bashan writes, and I quote, "Hello, dear Chaim. Famed chansonnier Charles Aznavour arrives in Israel next month. Your opinion about the man and his chansons." I'm sorry, it's chansons. I think I misspelled it. Oh, chansonnier. Famed chansonnier, Charles Aznavour. Thanks, Gam Bashan. Gam Bashan, ani mitpayesh, ki ani lo biteti et ze karaui. I didn't pronounce it correctly, because I don't know. I honestly don't know about these things, Gam Bashan. I think that a chanson is French songs, right? These are French songs. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. Am I saying it right now, chanson? I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. I don't know much about this Gam Bashan. I don't know much about Charles Aznavour. I don't know much about French music. I just don't know enough to comment, Gam Bashan. I'm sorry. I apologize. Ani mitnatzel. But anyway, thank you so much, Gam Bashan. And again, I'm just wondering, I don't know if I said it right. I don't know if is it chanson or is it, I don't know, did I say it right? Chansonnier? I think the first time I certainly didn't say it right. So, I don't know. I just don't know enough about it. Thank you, Gam Bashan. And now we go to the great Mishmat, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, were blacks as depraved as they are now prior to the 1960s, unquote. Many of them were. Many of them were vicious anti-Semites even prior to the 1960s. I mean, there were all types of black leaders who were very anti-Semitic. Then you had the big black Muslim movement existed before the 1960s. And you had many other vicious anti-Semitic blacks preaching before the 1960s. But generally speaking, the condition of black communities and black families was much better before the 60s. Before the 60s, most blacks who had children were married. The mother and father of the child were married. Whereas now, 72%, according to the U.S. Census figure, 72% of black babies are born out of wedlock. Now, that didn't exist before the 60s. It was much less than that before the 60s. So, in some areas, the blacks were in better shape in terms of family life, in terms of the way the rest of the country was in better shape before the 60s. But you had tremendous anti-Semitism even before the 1960s. Tremendous anti-Semitism. The most popular black leaders were always the most anti-white and anti-Semitic leaders. And now Mishmat writes, and I quote, "Also a Dvar Torah on this week's parasha, Parashat Vayera." God bless you, unquote. Okay, great. That's great, Mishmat. I'm always happy to discuss the parashiyot. Parashat Vayera. There's so much to discuss in this. Let me see now. Where do I start? I mean, this is an action-packed parasha. By the way, parasha is the Torah portion that we read every week in the synagogue. And this is a real action-packed portion this week. We start out with the three men that come to visit Abraham while he's recuperating after he circumcised himself. On the third day, he was recuperating, and three men come to visit him. And of course, the three men, many of the commentators say the three men are three angels. The other commentators say other things. Harambam, Maimonides, says the whole thing was a dream. He says the whole thing was a dream with Abraham's meeting the three men. Why? Because Harambam says that if they're angels, they cannot come in angels cannot appear in physical form. Angels are only spiritual beings. So the only time you can see an angel is in a dream. You can't see an angel. You don't see angels in physical form. You only see them in the spiritual realm, which you see through dreams. That's Harambam. That's Maimonides. But there's a tremendous machloket Haramban. Haramban, who came after Harambam. Haramban says, no way, that's not true. What are you talking about? Anyway, so that's one of the machloket, by the way, means a disagreement. There's this tremendous disagreement among the rabbinic scholars about this. But that happens in this parasha. And they come to Abraham and they say to him, you are going to have a son with Sarah, with your wife Sarah. In other words, he was going to have Yitzchak, and God will keep his promise. And Abraham was 99 years old at the time. Sarah was 90 years old, and God promises you are going to have a son, and God will keep his promise. So that's, and then God, and then the three angels, in addition to that, say, we're on our way now to Sodom ve'Amora, we're going to Sodom and Gomorrah to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And then we have this episode in this parasha where Abraham appeals to God not to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Because Abraham had a personal stake in this. Abraham saved Sodom and Gomorrah when there was a war between Abraham and the four kings. The five kings. Abraham saved Sodom and Gomorrah in that war. So he felt a personal responsibility to these cities and to the people in that area. He felt a personal responsibility to them to try to save them. And so he said, if there are 50 righteous people, are the righteous going to be killed together with the wicked? And Hashem, you know, says to him, that, and makes it clear they're not 50 righteous. And so on. And then he goes 45 righteous, 40 righteous, keeps going down and down. The number keeps going down. And finally, when it's clear there aren't even 10 righteous people in Sodom and Gomorrah, it's clear that the cities have to be destroyed. Harambam again says this is all a dream. Harambam says the whole thing is a dream. That when the angels go, the story that's described in the Torah, when the angels go to Sodom to save Lot, Lot is Abraham's nephew, and they want to save Lot and his family and destroy the rest of the city. Harambam says that's all a dream as well, because you can't see the angels. So this is all a dream either of Abraham or it's a dream of Lot, but it's a dream. And of course, Haramban, who comes after Harambam, completely disagrees with that and says, no way, this really happened, and that angels can have a physical form, can become, they are spiritual beings, but they can become physical beings. It is possible for angels to develop a physical appearance. And of course, the angels in this parasha do destroy Sodom and Gomorrah and save Lot and his family. But Lot's wife looks back and she's turned into a pillar of salt. They were told not to look back on Sodom and Gomorrah, but she did look back. She broke the commandment and did look back, and she was turned into a pillar of salt. I don't have to tell you once again that obviously among Chazal, among the rabbis, there's a question, is this symbolic, is this real, that she was turned... There's no question, Sodom and Gomorrah existed. That's for sure. That there's no dispute. Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed. That's for sure. As far as that's concerned, there's no dispute. But if it happened that she turned into a pillar of salt, and if it happened the way it's described in a dreamlike form in the Bible, if it happened like that, or if it didn't, that's where you have... the machloket. That's where you have a disagreement among the rabbis. And then you have the story, And then if that's not enough, you have Akedat Yitzchak. You have Avraham willing to sacrifice his son Yitzchak because God commands him to, and Yitzchak willing to be sacrificed. You have that tremendous story, that huge moral story, that tremendous, difficult, painful test that was Abraham's 10th test. You know, Abraham went through 10 tests. God tested him 10 times, and that was his 10th and final and most difficult test. And so, you know, you have that great story. So this is just, and of course, in the end, Abraham, of course, does not sacrifice Yitzchak. God stops it, but God saw that Abraham passed the test and Yitzchak passed the test. But you have all these stories all in one parasha. So this is an action-packed parasha. What a magnificent, boy, our Torah is so magnificent, so filled with so many stories that teach us so much about what our purpose in life is and what we're supposed to do to make this a better world. What a magnificent, and what we're supposed to do to attain holiness. What a magnificent book the Torah is. Anyway, that's this week's parasha. Thank you, Mishmat. And now we go to the great Kahana loyalist who writes, and I quote, Dechaim, do you know of any leftists who did tshuva and joined Rabbi Kahana Zatzal? Unquote. Oh, of course. Of course. When I was in JDL, we had, you know, there were loads of leftists. There were loads of former leftists who you know, saw the light. Absolutely. There were people who were in the anti-war movement against the Vietnam War or were in the civil rights movement and other left-wing movements. And because of Rabbi Kahana, they were inspired to do tshuva and to join JDL. I saw that many times, many, many times. I even met older people. Don't forget, this is going back 40 years now. I even met older people 30, 40 years ago who, when they were younger, were communists. I actually knew one woman who was a very sweet, wonderful woman, who was actually, in her youth, she was a communist because she thought that the communists were defending the Jews. Communists were fighting for the Rosenbergs and fighting and claiming to fight against anti-Semitism. So she thought the communists are defending the Jews. When she found out that they're Jew haters, of course, she became very anti-communist. But she actually was a communist, and she immediately changed and became very loyal, a very loyal Kahanist, and became the biggest anti-communist and the biggest demonstrator, the most loyal demonstrator we had at our protests for Soviet Jewry against the Soviets. But there were many, many cases like this. Absolutely. Absolutely. And God willing, if we ever get to first base and become a mass movement again, I think you'll see a lot of cases like this once again. I think you'll see former leftists in America and in Israel waking up and coming to their senses. I think you'll see that again. Thank you, Kahana Loyalist. And I want to thank everybody for doing another show that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.